أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا وطبيب نفوسنا وحبيب قلوبنا أبي القاسم محمد صلى الله عليه وآله وسلم، لا سيما بقية الله روحي وأرواح العالمين لتراب مقدمه الفداء. My very dear brothers and sisters in Islam, السلام عليكم جميعا ورحمة الله وبركاته. الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله. Tonight we have a very sad occasion of the anniversary of the martyrdom of our 8th beloved Imam, Imam Ali ibn Musa al-Ridha alayhi salam, finishing the month of Safar. Inshallah, at the end of my talk, I will take you on a very quick journey to Mashhad Imam Ridha alayhi salam. But as for now, as Brother Saeed mentioned, let us continue with the discussion that we started last week on the topic of Islam and state, or Islam and religion, or state and religion, compatible or incompatible. Just to recap quickly, for those who've been with us, we learned in the previous discussions, inshallah, about the historical background of the topic, that in all divine religions, for as long as we can remember, all the Abrahamic religions, from the very ancient time, state and religion have not only been compatible, they've been identical. There has been always this situation that the head of the religious head of the community has also been the head of the political matters, social matters of the community, especially within the Abrahamic religions. What, by the grace of God, I want to do in this session tonight, and hopefully wind it up here and leave the rest of it to your investigations, and of course there will be some time for Q&A as well, is to address some misconceptions and misgivings about the topic. I will be also tonight giving some more quotations from the prophetic narrations, as well as quotations from our very eminent scholars of the past, to again address another misconceptions that people, they may assume that this topic is something that Imam Khomeini has invented and has brought up, and before him didn't exist. And inshallah then we'll go to the Majlis of Imam Ridha alayhi salam, and we'll finish it with the Q&A. Alright, one of the very common topics once we open discussions like about Wilayat al-Faqih is this critics that, why can't you just give us a religious talk? We are here sitting like tonight commemorating the martyrdom of Imam Ali ibn Musa Ridha alayhi salam. Just talk about the lifestyle of Imam Ridha alayhi salam, some ahadith or something about the life of Imam Ridha alayhi salam, or the Prophet, or Karbala. We don't want to talk about politics. We're not here for the sake of politics. Such people, they assume that talking about Walayat al-Faqih, it's a political matter, political topic, and especially in a negative sense of it. The truth is that with this mentality, if we were living centuries back at the time of, let's say at the time of Imam Ali alayhi salam, at the time of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, sure, most likely we would not be joining the camp of Amir al-Mu'mineen or the camp of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And I tell you what, the reason for that. The reason is the following, that just imagine that you were living in the year 40 after the migration of the Prophet. Before that, at the time of the government of Imam Ali alayhi salam, as the head of the state, he is fighting now with who? On the one hand, you see one of the cousins of the Prophet, that is Zubair. On the other hand, you see another cousin of the Prophet, that is Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, Amir al-Mu'mineen. Again, in another war, you see on the one side, the son-in-law of the Prophet, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, Amir al-Mu'mineen. On the other hand, you see another, one of the wives of the Prophet. People with this mentality that they said, look, I don't want to get involved in politics, they would pull out from both sides and the best. Like today, they say that, no, I'm neither with the Islamic Republic nor with the West. I don't want to get involved in politics. This mentality is not definitely an Islamic mentality. Shaheed Mutahhiri rahmatullah alayhi says that in a sense, we should be grateful that we are not living at the time of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Because yes, we give that lip service to Imam Hussein often when we say, Ya laytana kunna ma'ak fanafuza fawzan azima. I wish we were with you to be prosperous, great prosperity. But hey, hang on a second. In truth, if I was living at the time of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, and I believe in separation of politics and religion, then what did Imam Hussein alayhi salam do? Didn't he stand against the tyrant of his time, the king of his time, raising sword even against him? Isn't this a political issue? If this is not a political stand, I wonder what the politic then would really mean. So, when we read the biography of the prophets, as mentioned clearly in the Quran, in the real and true sense of it, leaves us with no doubt, and I really have these questions for these sincere brothers and sisters, that why is it that Nimrod attempted to burn Prophet Ibrahim? Why is it that Pharaoh, the king of the time of Moses, Prophet Moses, stood against him that wanted to kill him and his tribe even? Why is it that Pilate or the Roman king attempted in crucifying Jesus, which we believe did not happen? Why is it that the chiefs of Quraysh stood against the Prophet of Islam? Why is it that Yazid stood against Imam Hussein alayhi salam? Why is it that all our imams are killed by poison or sword? Why is it that Imam Mahdi anjalallahu farajahu sharif is in occultation? Really, if they were living a hermit lifestyle, in a cave or in a mosque, in a church, in a synagogue, in a place of worship, and believing that religion is a personal and private matter, and believing that they should not get involved in political issues, like the misquotations that they have about Jesus having said that, leave what is Caesar to Caesar's and what is to God to God, unless you say that he was practicing taqiyya, otherwise it's impossible. For the life of me, I cannot fathom a prophet of God, a messenger of God would say this, unless in a state of taqiyya, which is a different story, and we believe if there is any truth in it, that's the interpretation for it. Otherwise, all of them were concerned about the well-being of their communities, as part of their well-being definitely was to make sure that the law of God is executed. Therefore, brothers, sisters, there's no such thing to think that if we are having such so-called political issues about the topic of Walayatul Faqih, for example, this is not a religious issue. This is purely a religious discussion and nothing else. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad wa ajjal farajahum. Now, the bedrock of the discussion that I have for you to provide the topic with some evidences from the Quran and the Riwayat is one ayah. Unfortunately, I cannot hear your voice. I hope that you have my voice. This ayah is in Surah Al-Hajj, which is one of the proofs that why is it that the head of the state has to be the most God-fearing person and the most, in the sense of piety, and the most learned in the term of practicing and introducing Islam. The ayah is in Surah Al-Hajj, ayah 41, and I recite it, and I invite brothers and sisters to bless you, please, your mouth and your session with recitation of the ayah of the Quran. The only catch to it is that you need to really say it out loud enough so that I can hear it all the way crossing the Pacific Ocean. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم الذين please repeat after me الذين إن مكناهم في الأرض أقاموا الصلاة وآتوا الزكاة وأمروا بالمعروف ونهوا عن المنكر ولله عاقبة الأمور. A group of Muslims, they turned to the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam and said, Ya Rasulullah, who deserves to lead to be the head of the state, the head of the community for all its political and religious matters. What are the criteria for that? The ayah in Surah Al-Hajj that we just recited together was revealed to the Prophet. Tell them, الَّذِينَ, those qualified people are those Muslim rulers. إِمَّكَّنَّاهُمْ فِي الْأَرْضِ, if we give them authority, if we give them the power in the land of God, what they will do is the following. And then Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala mentions some of the main missions and visions of the Muslim rulers that they were supposed to stand by. This first and foremost, الَّذِينَ إِمَّكَّنَّاهُمْ فِي الْأَرْضِ أَقَامُوا الصَّلَاةِ, they establish prayers as a means of worshipping, as a means of communication between man and God, individually, congregationally, spending money of Baytul Mal to build more mosques and places of worshipping, not spending the money of the taxpayers to make more casinos, more, places of committing sins, not opening more liquor shops at every corner. First is salat. And the second, wa'ata was zakat. They are also on the mission of collecting and giving charity, encouraging the community to become charitable. Huh? Encouraging the community and spending the money of the taxpayers to support the oppressed, not the oppressors. Not to send it to Israel, but to send to the oppressed people. This is the mission of an Islamic state that God is describing and says that whoever stands by this and such criteria deserves to be the head of the state. وَأَمَرُوا بِالْمَعْرُوفِ, they enjoin good. وَنَهَوْا عَنِ الْمُنْكَرِ, they prohibit evil. As we are talking and we are having our session tonight in Washington, there is a parade going on. They call it Pride Parade. Gay pride parade, excuse me to be explicit. Unfortunately, we are living in such a world that gay lobby has become so strong that if you want to comment on one of your colleagues who is some homosexual, you may lose your job. All right? In Sydney in February every year, there is a Mardi Gras parade, they call it. The gay parade, they call it in Australia Mardi Gras. It's ironic that Mardi Gras used to be a Christian, a Catholic tradition before the Lent and the fasting month begins for the confession. Now look at what it's become. And every year you see more communities, more different professions and so are joining it. And the funny thing is that it is televised live. All for the reason that it's attracting state revenue. Because it's attracting tourism, local and international. So once there is no ruling of God, once there is no state of God, once there is no hukmullah, it's left to people to vote. Tomorrow come, our president is a gay, so what? The mayor is a gay, so what? He's elected. And then whatever they want goes. In Islam, there is a mission, there is a vision behind this, the having authority for the statesmen to help and pave the way for the prosperity of their subjects and their citizens. Not just for the sake of making revenue. Gambling industry is justified under the state revenue. Wine industry is justified under the state revenue. Prostitute industry is justified under... Everything is justified as long as it may, we can make money. Taxpayers, they have to pay and support the oppressors. Creates job and things like that. So, Quran sets a criteria for the statesmen on the condition that they meet these conditions of aqam al-salat, ata al-zakat, enjoining good and forbidding evil. It is justified for them to be the head of the state. Otherwise, they have usurped the position. Again, sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. In the email that inshallah you've received, I've shared the hadith from the Holy Prophet of Islam, and I deliberately mentioned this from the Prophet, and the following one inshallah from another hadith from Imam Ali ibn Musa Rida alayhi salam, because we are commemorating their martyrdom or their departure from this world, to know that we are talking religion. We are purely talking religion. We are talking about the words of Ma'asumin alayhi salam. The Holy Prophet of Islam is quoted to have said, and please see that how profound this hadith is. The Prophet says, "Ad-Din wa Sultan akhawan tu aman." Religion and government are twin brothers. La budda li kull wahidin minhuma. They both need each other. Religion needs authority, government, and the government needs the religion as well. لا بد لكل واحد منهم منهما من صاحبه. Then the Prophet continues, والدين أصن. Religion is the foundation. والسلطان حارس. Government authority is the protector, is the guard. ما لا أصل منهدم. Whatever has no foundation, any house without a proper foundation will collapse, will perish. وما لا حارس له ضائع. Anything that has no guard will be lost. If the religion of Islam is lost in the Arab countries, it's because there is no guard for them. There is no guardianship of the jurists for them. Because they are running their countries, their nation by their whim and desires, that eventually, obviously, they become the puppets of the West. All right. The Prophet says that if you want to maintain your religion, there has to be an Islamic authority to enforce the law of God. Likewise, Imam Ali ibn Musa Rida alayhi salam, and I have done some research some years ago. Let me share something with you, brothers and sisters. Of all the Imams of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, the ahadith, the words of wisdom that we have from Imam Ali ibn Musa Rida alayhi salam, in terms of government, state, al-imama, leadership, is more than all other imams. What I'm trying to say is that if, and I've done the research, and I'm talking about my personal research on the words of Imam Rida alayhi salam, that the ratio of the percentage of the words of Imam Rida alayhi salam on the topic of imama is more than any other topic. One of the ahadith that the imam says is the following. The imam says, "Inna al-imama zimamuddin." Leadership is the power of the religion. Wa nizamul muslimin is the order of the Muslims. Wa salahud dunya wa izzul mu'minin, and the utility of this world and the dignity of the believers. If Muslims want to have their dignity in today's world and in any time, they need to have the right proper statesmen on the top, otherwise they will be humiliated, as they are getting humiliated in many instances. The Imam continues, Al-Imam yuhillu halal Allah. It is only the right Imam, of course, that the Imam is talking about. He is the one who enforces the halal, or the practice of halal, and forbids the haram. Wa yuqimu hudud Allah, and maintains the limits that the Almighty God has set forth. It's the red line, you cannot cross it. No matter how much revenue it makes, one industry is prohibited, period. وَيَذُبُ عَنْ دِينِ اللَّهِ. It is the right Imam that can protect the religion of Allah. So in conclusion, with the presence of the Prophet, there is no doubt that the Prophet deserves and is the only one whose government is legitimate to lead the community for all the religious matters as well as political matters, as the head of a state and the head of the religion, indisputably. When there is an Imam al-Ma'asum, like Amir al-Mu'mineen, or any of the Imams of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam present, again, there is no dispute that they had to rule and be the leader and the head of the state. The question is the following. Now, what about the time of the occultation, like our present time? What are we supposed to say? There is no prophet anymore. Our dear Imam is in occultation. It's been over a millennium. So what are we supposed to do? And remember that the discussion that we have, brothers and sisters, I'm talking about an Islamic community, an Islamic country, okay? In an Islamic country or community, especially for us as the followers of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, what are the solutions that we have in this situation? One suggestion is to say that, look, the position of the head of the state in Islam is limited only to the ma'sumin, to the infallible, whether the Prophet or the Imam of Ma'sum. At the time of occultation, Islam has no answer for us. Islam says that, I leave it to you, go in a democratic way and vote. Whoever is elected, let him run the country. Or whoever wins the coup, let him run the country. Whoever, whether king, dictator, president in a democratic way, I leave it to people's destiny as they wish. Is it possible? Can you fathom Islam that has an answer to whether I have to step in the mosque with my right foot or left one? Such an important issue is not mentioned in Islam. So this option is out, to my common sense. Second option, to say that Islam has recommended a qualified jurist, a qualified learned scholar, as the advisor of the head of the state. Again, the head of the state should be, in the best, in today's, you know, style of it, should be voted by majority, whoever they vote. But he should have a board of advisory consisting of the jurists, Muslim jurists and mujtahideen and the learned scholars. The problem of this suggestion and this option again is the following, that if the head of the state has no obligation to follow the advice of the jurist, again he may dismiss it at his convenience, or he may use or abuse them at his convenience. The situation in Iraq today, and I'm quoting this from the lips that I sat beside one of the very eminent maraji in Najaf al-Ashraf, may the Almighty God protect them all. He was telling me, just sitting beside him, he was telling me that here in Iraq, I do not have the authority to appoint an imam of a jama'ah in a mosque. How can I say something on political affairs of the nation, as if the government cares? The same in Afghanistan and things like that. If the mujtahid brothers, sisters, has no authority over the president, over the one who is elected, then the president, the king, the dictator, whoever that person, the ruler may be, will easily dismiss, discard. In the West, who cares about the comments if a bishop makes? How much value does it have on political issues? They just turn him off and say that, who are you to talk about it? We've got a president, we've got, you know, all the statesmen or whoever. A business tycoon would have a more word than a bishop in the West today, okay? So this option also is not a practical option to solve the problem that we are after. The only option is left to say that, as Islam has recommended, as the Ahadith have fully supported that, is to say that there has to be the head of the state, on the head of this, what do you call it, pyramid of the state, there has to be a God-fearing, a pious, learned Muslim scholar who knows about the Islamic law more than anyone else, to supervise and to have the authority to make sure that the Islamic law is executed for the sake of Muslims. And that person is the closest one to the prophets and the imams in terms of piety and in terms of knowledge. We are not saying he is ma'soom, does not make a mistake. We are not saying that he has the knowledge of the unseen. We are saying at the time of occultation, this is the best option that we have. Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahj al-Balagha, for example, he says, "Inna awla an-nas bil anbiya a'lamuhum bima ja'u bih." If you want to know who is the closest one to the prophets, are those who know about the prophetic teachings more than anyone else. And those are none other than our learned, pious scholars. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Another misconceptions or misgiving that in the West are promoting this a lot. How come that all of the sudden, after all the centuries of the history of faith, all of the sudden آیت الله خمینی، امام خمینی رحمت الله علیه، all of the sudden he came up with this theory of ولایت الفقیه, the guardianship of juries. How come none of the juries in the past have ever spoken about it? In my treatise, that inshallah at the end I'll give you the reference for that, I have listed numbers of the eminent scholars from the time of Sheikh al-Mufid to present time that they have well spoken about the topic. Imam Khomeini is not the only one who has brought up the issue. Yes, Imam Khomeini, by the grace of God, was blessed to execute this theory, to apply this theory to the best of his possibility. All right? I give you a few examples tonight. First, Al-Muhaqqiq al-Thani. Muhaqqiq al-Thani, his actual name is As-Sayyid Nuruddin al-Karaki, from one of the villages in Jabal Amel. He was from Lebanon. He has written a small book on the topic of Salat al-Jum'ah. On the topic of Salat al-Jum'ah, look at what he says. This scholar has died almost 500 years ago, way before Imam Khomeini or his father, grandfather, where any of them were born, 500 years ago. And I quote his words exactly for you. He says, اتفق أصحابنا رضوان الله عليهم. All our scholars are unanimous, may God be pleased with them. أن الفقيه العدل الإمامي, a jurist who is pious and is Shia, الجامع لشرائط الفتوى, the one who meets the criteria to give fatwa, المعبر عنه بالمجتهد في الأحكام الشرعية, the one that we refer to as مجتهد in jurisprudential matters. Such a person, نائب من قبل الأئمة الهدى, he is the representative of the Imams of Ahlul Bayt عليهم السلام, في جميع مال النيابة فيه مدخل, in all matters that can accept representation. Like, he cannot represent Imam al-Masum in the sense of wilayat takwiniyah. He cannot represent the Prophet to be a Prophet. But in all matters of running the nation, the state, jurisprudential issues, judging and so forth, then the Muhammad Thani gives even example. For example, it says, فَيَجِبُ التَّحَاكُمُ إِلَيْهِ, therefore it is obligatory on Muslims to go to a jurist on issues of dispute for, as an arbitrator, for judgment, they have to go to him. They cannot go to a secular judge, and other examples that he gives. The second, Muhaddith al-Faydhil Kashani. Faydhil Kashani, again, was one of our very eminent scholars who died about 350 or so, more than three centuries back. In one of his books, Mafatih al-Sharai', he divides the governments into two. He says we have two types of governments, legitimate and illegitimate governments. Then he says a legitimate government has three examples. First, Wilayatul Nabi, the government of the Prophet, obviously. The second, Wilayatul Imam al-Ma'soom, the government of an infallible Imam. And the third, he says, Wilayatul Faqih, and I'm quoting word by word. This is Faydhil Kashani, rahmatullah alayhi. The third example, from whose works Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi, has benefited a lot and has developed it, is Mullah Ahmad al-Naraqi. Mullah Ahmad al-Naraqi was living less than two centuries back. It would be about 180, 190 years ago, again before Imam Khomeini was born. He was the teacher of Sheikh Murtada Ansari, Sahib al-Jawahir, and so forth. He is the one who has written more than any of the ancient scholars on the topic of Wilayat al-Faqih. And again, like the previous ones, he makes it very clear that any position in terms of the running, judging, and the things that the Prophet and the Imam al-Ma'soom has had, a faqih would also have and must have as well. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Because I really want to wind it up tonight, thank you very much for your patience. Couple of more common questions, and then inshallah to the majlis, and then your comments and questions. A very common question or comment is that we accept that in an Islamic country where the majority are Muslims, Then there has to be a head of the state, has to be a jurist with authority. Then why can't there be an assembly of jurists? Why is it that in Iran you have only one wali faqih? Why can't you have an assembly of fuqaha running the show? Okay? The answer is the following. Number one, you show me a country in the world, present or in the past, that has had more than one president, more than one king, more than one sultan, more than one ruler. You name the person, but show me that there has been an assembly of the presidents. Why in such a democratic, advanced democratic state, such as the United States of America, we don't have an assembly of the presidents to decide? What are you talking about? We don't have even more than two parties to choose between. So this, the reason, the wisdom behind that, because this is not practical. In the real sense of it, it's not practical. On a jurisprudential issues, brothers, sisters, we even still don't have an assembly of maraja. Some people, they argue, and it's a very technical issue, I really don't have time to elaborate on it, but even on jurisprudential level, it's not possible for an assembly of maraja to give a verdict. Because if you know what you're talking about, marja'iyya and mujtahid, it means the one who has an independent opinion on some certain issues or of his understanding. There is no room for compromise to say that, all right, I'll compromise, or we make a collective, you know, the fatwa decision on that. Let alone when it comes to political matters, that at the end of the day, even Quran tells the Prophet to consult his community, his selected companions, yet فَإِذَا عَزَمْتَ فَتَوَكَّلْ عَلَى اللَّهِ. At the end of the day, you have to make the decision. One person has to make a decision. So this is one answer. The second answer is that the position of Walayat al-Faqih is wajib kifai. Wajib kifai, it means that once one person takes that obligation, the obligation is removed from the rest. Like there is a mayyat, a deceased person here, a Muslim deceased person, all of us alternatively are obliged to offer Salat al-Mayyat on him. Once one person takes it upon himself and knows how to do it, the rest, they don't have that obligation. And that's why our fuqaha are all unanimous that once one person is waliyyul faqih, they don't need to get involved and become walayatul fuqaha. Yes, our faqih is recommended, as it is exactly happening in our time. His Eminence Ayatollah Khamenei Hafizahullah, he is in good connection and relation and consultation with our maraja in Qom. I'm aware that very frequently he visits the holy city of Qom and sits with the maraja on issues that needs to be discussed. And it's a very good communication and understanding between them. But at the end of the day, one person has to make the final decision. And the last, again, common issue is that, well, brother, come on. In Iran, there are so many faults. We know so many mistakes that these statements are making. Are you talking about an Islamic state like Islamic Republic of Iran? Is this your model that you are introducing to us? What if a Wali Faqih makes a mistake? What if his board of advisory make mistake? What if his statement, president and ministers and so forth, they make mistake? My answer to this is, remember, we did not say that we are talking about the perfect, with absolute zero defect, you know, situation in it. We are not talking about the perfect state. We are talking about relatively the best possible state that could be established during the time of occultation. Otherwise, why would we wait for the coming of Imam al-Mahdi, ajjalallahu farajahu sharif? The problem is that the same argument goes with the issue of marja'iyya as well. What if our marja makes a mistake? Don't they? For sure, they are prone to mistakes as well. They are not ma'sumin. So does it justify to say that, look, I don't want to follow any mujtahid because there is always a chance that they make a mistake? We are talking about a professional mistake. There's a big difference between when you go to a professional specialist doctor than my grandmother prescribed something. Her mistake is not justified, whereas the mistake of a specialist is justified. Okay? So for the same reason that we don't abandon following a mujtahid because he may make a mistake, likewise we cannot negate or we cannot discard the concept of Wilayat al-Faqih just because he may make a mistake. Second, another example, are we good Muslims? Let's be honest. Are we good practicing Muslims? Is it justified for a non-Muslim to say that, if Islam is what I see, I don't want this religion? Is it acceptable to have this approach? Just because we are not good practicing Muslims, therefore Islam is not good? So if there is mistake, and there are mistakes, there are shortcomings, I've got my own so many critics and comments, but we are not talking about examples and applications. We are talking about the concept of Wilayat al-Faqih on a religious level, whether this is something that exists in Islam or doesn't exist in Islam. In a nutshell, the concept of Wilayat al-Faqih not only exists in Islam, is part of Islam. It's really an essential part of Islam. Separating it from the teachings of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, we have not learned and believed and practiced the teachings of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Still, there's much to talk about the topic, but having a mixed gathering, I would like to conclude it here. But for your further study, if you are interested, as I said, I've written a short treatise on the topic. If you go to our website www.ihic.org.au and then go to ebook under the topic of jurisprudence, you'll find the treatise that one of my students has translated it kindly into English. But for now, let's go to Mashhad, brothers and sisters. If I may ask you to turn off your lights, and inshallah we'll enlighten the lights within us. Ya Rab. Sallallahu alayk. يا علي بن موسى الرضا المرتضى Before I tell you about the significance of visiting Imam Rida alayhi salam tonight, let me share with you one very close to home experience and memory. The year 2012 for me and my family was a very sad year. February last year, March last year, we lost our father, my father. And just before the year 2012 ends, we had to experience the loss of our mother as well. My parents, for as long as I remember, they used to always, at this time, the last days of the month of Safar, go to Mashhad, pilgrimage to Imam Rida alayhi salam. But now let me tell you this memory, that my son, who was not even in Isfahan, the night before the passing away of my mother, just one night before that, he's had a dream that his grandmother is driving and going to the shrine, to the Rafas, to the Zarih of Imam Reza alayhi salam. Early in the morning, he calls me and says, "Dad, please make sure you stay with Maman Jan, with grandmother. I had a dream like this last night. And I was asking her to wait until I can join her as well." And she says that, "No, Reza, I have to go. Imam Reza is waiting for me." My interpretation was that, inshallah, she was received by Imam Reza alayhi salam. She was getting the reply of all the greetings that for years she used to go with her husband, paying respect to Imam Reza alayhi salam. Although you are in a far distance, but bo'd manzil nabuvad dar safar ruhani. Tonight, whatever you have, all your needs, all what we need is to have our hearts present with us. Let's go to Mashhad in a quick visit. Qabr Imam Hashtum Sultan Din Reza از جان ببوس و بر در آن بارگاه باش. Now you can imagine, especially for those who've been to Mashhad, you're standing at the entrance gate of the Haram, seeking permission. أدخل يا الله، أدخل يا رسول الله. Oh Allah, may I enter? Oh Messenger of God, may I enter? أدخل يا أمير المؤمنين، أدخل يا فاطمة الزهراء. This part of the ziyarat of Imam Ridha alayhi salam, I love it, especially for those who come from a very remote area. You can imagine that crossing the ocean such a far distance. Then repeat with me, Allahumma inni samattu ilayk min ardi wa qata'tu al-bilada raja'a rahmatik. Oh Allah, I've come from a very remote distance, very remote area. I've come all the way seeking your mercy. Now I have your needs present. Ya wajihan inda Allah ishfa' lana inda Allah. Ya wajihan inda Allah ishfa' lana inda Allah. Ya wajihan inda Allah ishfa' lana inda Allah. Salawat.